Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I'm going to talk about the profound implications of the things that Jim Goodall has shared on my show and on other people's shows. To be sure, Jim Goodall had given interviews and been interviewed for documentaries before he came onto my show, but the information is still staggering in its implications, and I wanted to go over that because what I like to do is I like to bring things down to ground level. There's just too much nonsense out there. There's too much drivel, and the noise to signal ratio is ever increasing, so I want to bring it back down to the ground level. And then when we go over what has been shared by highly credible people, well-connected people like Jim Goodall, then we begin to see a bigger picture. Then we begin to see an idea of what's really going on. One of the comments that Jim Goodall shared was a quote from Ben Rich, the late director of Lockheed Skunk Works, the Advanced Projects Division of Lockheed, where they build the next generation aircraft and much more than aircraft, actually. You will hear this in the interview where Ben Rich, 10 days before he passed away, said to Jim Goodall, and I'm paraphrasing, I can't remember the exact quote, it was something along the lines of, we are working on things 50 years beyond your comprehension or understanding. We are working on things 50 years beyond your comprehension or understanding. And again, that may not be the exact quote. He could have just said beyond your comprehension or beyond your understanding. But still, the point is made. He did not say, Jim, we are working on things 50 years beyond your understanding of engineering or beyond your understanding of aviation. No, he said beyond your understanding, period. Okay. Ben Rich also said, anything you can imagine, we can already do. Again, that's a profound statement. I can imagine a lot. Teleportation, traveling tremendous distances to other star systems, using stargates, using wormholes, telekinesis, etc., etc. What's interesting is the things that Ben Rich hinted at have been confirmed in anecdotal testimony from many of the MyLabs that I've spoken to. They've already experienced being teleported. They've already experienced being taken on off-world missions. They've already experienced going through stargates. And again, it goes back to the statement, anything you can imagine, we can already do. We are working on things 50 years beyond your level of understanding. Now, when Ben Rich says something like that, I sit up and take notice. I don't sit up and take notice when people start talking about Yellow Lantern, hexagonal alliances, and all this other nonsense. The clown show, okay? Just think of a clown show. There's a clown over there with real big oversized shoes, and he's like juggling a bunch of multicolored balls, and over there is another clown with big floppy shoes, and he's riding along on stilts, and that's what I mean by the clown show. And I'm not interested in that, never have been, and I think that it's been put there, this clown show, precisely to distract, confuse, and lead astray some people that are coming to grips with the awesome and perhaps even frightening reality that they've been involved in some of these projects. Instead of finding information from a Jim Goodall, let's say, instead they're led astray to the, you know, Yellow Hexagonal Alliance rubbish. And it's designed that way, folks. Now, when you combine what Ben Rich said and what Jim Goodall's other sources have told him, it turned out, talk about a synchronicity. It turned out that it was Jim Goodall under a pen name, and he talks about this in the second part of the members section in his interview. And that's why it behooves people to sign up, because you know, we've got a whole slew of really great interviews and commentaries coming up. Jim Goodall was the one who wrote under a pen name that Gung Ho magazine article, which I've referenced in the past. Of all the people on the planet, it turned out Jim Goodall wrote that article. And I remember some key points in that article distinctly, that his sources have told him, this anonymous writer using a pen name, turned out to be Jim Goodall, that out at the Nevada test site, they were working on alien technology, and that there were also aliens there that were helping the engineers and the scientists understand and develop the technology, back engineer the technology, and create their own man-made technology based on alien propulsion systems and alien concepts, designs, fuel systems. Jim Goodall also talked about in this article he penned under a pseudonym, that his sources told him not only are there aliens out at the Nevada test site, but the American military and aerospace corporations had already developed a base on Mars. And this article came out sometime in the 1980s, early 90s, I can't remember, more likely the late 80s. And I remember reading that and my jaw dropped, because it had the smell of truth to it. It had the vibe of truth to it. And lo and behold, after all these years, it turns out to be the extremely well-connected Jim Goodall who wrote that article. And note that he mentioned a Mars base long before we started having all of these scattered and fragmented so-called whistleblowers telling about their sojourns to Mars and all this other stuff. We have it from an extremely reputable, reliable person with well-developed sources in the deep black world that, yes, we're already developing our own fleets of craft based on ET propulsion, ET technology. This is what Ben Rich referred to as unfunded opportunities. As Jim Goodall pointed out, what it meant was these were instances when they didn't have to purchase the technology. It was given to them by the aliens. At least one of these alien groups are the Zeta Reticulians. And also you will see, if you listen to the interview with Jim Goodall, that he knew Bob Lazar before Bob Lazar joined the project at S4. And he recalls Bob Lazar as being extremely skeptical about UFOs and aliens and ETs, and thought that anyone who believed in such things were just basically crazy or stupid, unscientific. And lo and behold, look what the multiverse served up to Bob Lazar, a heaping helping of oppressive security, a heaping helping of harassment, demonization, manipulation, etc., etc., because that's where Bob Lazar wound up. He wound up at S4 working on alien propulsion systems, and I have no reason to doubt him. Bob Lazar says that he's the one that came up with the name Element 115 for the fuel source for that particular Zeta Reticulian sport model craft, as he dubbed it, the sport model, because of its sleek nature. It was a classic flying saucer. It was Bob Lazar who came up with the term Element 115 to describe this stable as opposed to unstable element, unstable fuel source. Think of uranium-235, plutonium-239 as being unstable, whereas element 115 was stable. You could hold it in your hand. And again, the implications of that, that in the late 80s, at least by the late 80s, advanced alien craft were already being studied and test flown at the Nevada test site. The fuel source, Element 115, the propulsion system, etc., the navigation was all being studied. And one has to look at it from the standpoint of, you know, we're thinking beyond experimentation. We're thinking beyond R&D, research and development. We're thinking of operational status. We're talking about developing these systems and then doing things with it, going off world with it, going to other planets, other star systems. In that interview, Jim Goodall points out there were a number of test pilots who died test flying the SR-71, and a number of test pilots all across the board over the years. That's what, you know, happens when these people test fly these craft, whether it's based on advanced exotic alien propulsion systems or more prosaic down-to-earth human technologies. If it's cutting edge, right, so-called, the pilots are there to determine the envelope, the flight envelope, and not only as far as characteristics, operating characteristics, speed, altitude, fuel consumption, etc., but like test pilots purposely make planes they fly go into a flat spin precisely so they can learn how to get out of it, right? Same thing with helicopter test pilots. They do things to make the helicopter lose its stability in flight. And the idea is for them to develop the means to make it flyable again, make it stable again. It's an inherently dangerous job. And the point of relevance is where the deep black military is concerned, deep black aerospace is concerned, they're not going to be squeamish about sending people into deep space, sending people through stargates, sending people off on craft to explore other worlds and even engage in combat with aliens in other worlds. They don't care if they lose people in the process, if there is an attrition rate, if people get killed, mangled, lose their minds. That's, as far as the controllers are concerned, that's beside the point. It's an attitude where the end justifies the means. And then you can easily see where that attitude prevails, how things can degenerate from there into, if it feels good, do it. This is why we hear stories, and I have no reason to doubt them. In fact, I know this has happened on Earth, where female Mylabs have been raped, and in some cases gang-raped, by soldiers in these deep black projects, as well as scientists, as well as engineers taking part in gang rapes. And I've heard similar stories where female Mylabs or female military personnel taken off-world have likewise been raped or gang-raped. It's that kind of system. It's a reptile system. It's a Draco system. At least some of these off-world deep black projects, I feel, and I've said this before, are under Draco reptilian control. There's no doubt in my mind, because just the nature of the program, the harshness of the security, how mind control is utilized, how abusive trauma is meted out to certain people in these projects, how even the security, the military people themselves, the lower ranking members of the military are subjected to a lot of mind control. It's very reptilian by its nature, and add to that fact, a lot of the shakers and movers, the key players in these projects, are themselves reptilian or Draco human hybrids, mantis hybrids, etc. So it's a situation where this far-flung galactic, intergalactic empire has extended its reach, its tentacles, to our little corner of the multiverse and basically co-opted a lot of the deep black projects here. And I've spoken about the likely way this had happened with all these secret societies and fraternal orders, basically Court of the Dragon, Brotherhood of the Serpent, Brotherhood of the Snake type fraternal orders and its offshoots, and how that was the template, the basis upon which all these deep black programs were piled onto it later. The hybridization agenda was in full force. And as time went on, as technology developed to the point where this recovered alien technology and alien technology given to the controllers of these deep black aerospace military projects, when these craft the technology was given, the technological know-how, the technological means had advanced enough so the people in the Deep Black projects could exploit these technologies. It wouldn't have done no good for these aliens to rock up and give this technology back in the Middle Ages. We have been done. Time means nothing to these aliens. They could wait, because it's only the rest of us, usually, that are stuck in this linear time mode. The aliens, or some of them anyway, can flit in and out of our time stream. So time means nothing to them. What I feel happened, and I've talked about this in the past, is these Deep Black underground base alien technology programs eventually merged. They coalesced with existing underground base ET operations. And we see this in Dulce, New Mexico, and we see this in Puerto Rico, and we see this in Sedona and any number of places around the world. Many places that we don't even have a name for it. We don't have a name for the underground facility. We just have an above ground location. The work that I did in the Victorville, Barstow area, we knew pretty much the precise location of an underground base within a mountain, but we didn't really have a name for the place. We just knew it was there. We knew the approximate location, the closest streets. It was, you know, outside of the towns. And there are other places that are quite well known as being alien bases and military bases. A lot of stuff going on in Puerto Rico right now. El Yunque Forest has been closed. Apparently, they've closed down El Yunque Park, and the locals have been saying that there has been an ongoing flap, is the old term, UFO wave of craft flying around in El Yunque Forest. Now, this is the same El Yunque when I had Jorge Martin on the show, and folks, you've got to listen to that interview. That is a classic interview by any standards, and I'm very proud of that interview. It's an English language interview, very hard to find as far as I know. I've said this before, it's at risk of sounding redundant. You just won't find too many interviews with Jorge Martin in English. And he mentioned in El Yunque there's an area that seems to have a temporal time shift interdimensional quality to it, where people going through the park suddenly find themselves in this weird blackness where they don't see anything. They're kind of trapped for a while, and they are getting into a panic mode because they're stuck in this kind of blackness, and eventually they get out of it, but in the process there's missing time and all this other weird stuff going on. Jorge also talked about an alien base there in El Yunque that is more than just an underground base. There is an underground entrance from the surface, but according to some of Jorge's informants, there is an interdimensional aspect to that underground base as well. Not only does the base seem to be subterranean with an entrance to the surface, but there seems to be an interdimensional aspect to it as well. This unearthly, you know, bright light comes out from beneath it. And we've heard stories in the past of bright lights coming out of tunnel entrances and openings to subterranean tunnel systems. But there seems to be a strange aspect to this light that pours out from what seems to be a huge underground alien city that, again, has an interdimensional aspect to it. We've heard similar reports from Sedona, Arizona, where there actually seems to be some kind of temporal time displacement, time shift, timeline issue at work, where people will see all kinds of stuff out there in the Five Canyons area. Dinosaurs have even been reported. So these kinds of things are happening in certain places around the world. And I think as time goes on, we're going to see more and more of this merging of timelines, merging of dimensions, merging of worlds. And if the report's coming back from certain my labs who I trust implicitly, there seems to be an upsurge in alternate timeline, alternate reality type ops, missions, recons, etc. So all that is going on at this time. Before I end this first segment and before I launch into the members segment, I want to complete a thought earlier. I was talking about Area 51. I was talking about Bob Lazar. Now, of course, the lamestream media is having a hissy fit about, oh, the Russians are testing their nuclear missiles, ICBMs, and all this other stuff, when they're the ones making all these bellicose comments towards the Russians. But when the Russians decide to flex their muscles, first Putin talks about this next generation of weapons that they're rolling out, which is really not just the tip of the iceberg, but barely scratching the surface. And I'll get to that point in a moment. What the Russians are revealing now is not even their top-of-the-line high-tech. This is just stuff, most of it, Earth-terrestrial technology, probably with a little bit of ET technology and know-how thrown in. But basically, what we've seen, this latest generation that they've revealed of weaponry, long-distance weaponry, unmanned, remotely controlled underwater drones, etc., which pack a powerful punch. That's just what they've allowed people on the surface to know about. And so now the mainstream media in the U.S. is crying foul. Oh, look at them. They're testing a missile. And they make all these bellicose statements towards the Russians, make up these ridiculous stories about poisoning former spies. That's not how the spy game works. There's no reason to poison a used-up, washed-up, overly exposed spy from way back when. That's just not how the professionals operate in the espionage, counter-espionage, spy, counter-spy world. Black ops, that's more like a covert action black ops thing, and the odds that the Russians were behind that are slim and none. So the lamestream media is crying foul, yet another example of this victim-aggressor mentality at work. Gee, I wonder where they got that from. So, the point about the Russians and how it ties in earlier with what I was saying about Area 51, it should be remembered that Bob Lazar had pointed out that, according to the briefing papers he read when he was being briefed into the project there at S4, the Russians had a presence, back then it would have been the Soviets, had a presence at S4, where they were working jointly, the American team with the Soviet team, studying, analyzing, and attempting to back-engineer the alien technology. In this case, I'm presuming at least some of that alien technology would have been the Zeta Reticuli technology. And according to the reports that Bob Lazar had read, apparently there was some kind of falling out between the Americans and the Soviets up and left. And that was before Bob Lazar started working at S4. So it is a near certainty. In fact, I would just take it as a given. This is just me. No one else has to fall in line with this. But I feel that the Soviets slash and now the Russians, after the Soviets were basically kicked to the curb for the most part, the Russians have their own ET back engineering technology program going on and have had it for some time. So the technology that we're just now hearing about, and you can learn more about the latest generation of revealed Russian technology on websites like Sputnik News and Russia Insider and websites like that, Press TV and others. That's just the tip of the iceberg. It's not even their highest tech. They have ET technology. I'm sure they've, by now, have gone operational with some of their ET technology, just as deep black military aerospace elements in the U.S. and the U.K. have weaponized their ET technology. So keep that point in mind. And also, what the anecdotal testimony from people I know and trust implicitly, who've been taken to underground bases in Southern California, who have seen Russians working with Americans in these deep black underground bases where, in some cases, there are alien life forms or at least non-human life forms present. There had been a Russian presence in some of these facilities in the high desert in Southern California and in all likelihood elsewhere. So the point of relevance is what Putin has revealed in his recent, their version of a State of the Union address, where Putin talked about the readiness of his country's defensive systems and how they're not just going to roll over and play dead and hope the U.S. goes and bully boys someone else. The weaponry that he had described, high-tech to be sure, state-of-the-art that we're aware of to be sure, is only a tip of the iceberg. They have far more advanced technology and weaponry at their disposal. So anyhow, we've reached the end of this first segment of Bartley's commentaries on the cosmic wars, and I've got some interesting information, geopolitical, what's going on the surface that has some bearing for all of us, and that'll be in the members section. So wherever you may be, whatever you may be doing, dear listeners, have a very pleasant time, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now.